We all goof. We all screw up. But what could we do to become your partner? Not just for this event once, twice, for years.
Welcome to No More Bad Events, a fun and insightful podcast for professional event organizers and for anyone at any level interested in producing nothing but the best events. Each week, we'll talk with legendary event professionals to get an inside look into what they think makes a great event. And in the process, we'll draw out insider secrets, non-traditional approaches, and compelling stories from the most captivating personalities in the business. We'll definitely get the skinny on reaching that one big goal: no more bad events. I'm your host, Scott Bloom, comedian, event MC, and now your podcast host. Let's get started. No More Bad Events is produced and presented by eSpeakers, the most trusted, easy-to-use, full-service online platform for finding, connecting with, and hiring the best keynote speakers, hosts, and presenters in the world. With the deepest catalog of professionals available through the eSpeakers marketplace, you can be assured that the speaker you book will be the absolute best speaker based on your goals, bar none. eSpeakers, the number one way to find your next perfect speaker. For more information, go to eSpeakers.com. In the contractual world, we all know the phrase force majeure as an insurance clause, you know, act of God. But really, its translation in French means major or superior strength. And that's what our guest today has an abundance of. I'm so happy she's on the show today. Not only is she a great guest, but she's a good friend and one of the first people I ever worked with in the industry. Man, we go back a ways. And if you've been in the biz for any length of time, you probably have heard her name. It's my good friend, Jacqueline Bernstein. Jacqueline is currently president and co-owner of Empire Force Events and is quite literally the dynamo behind this 30-year-old award-winning New York-based event production and destination management company. From the stock market crash to 9/11 to the pandemic, Jacqueline and Empire Force Events have endured. Most likely because this Brooklyn native and industry legend has experience and chutzpah. All right, great. Now I gotta wipe down my mic. Anyway, she knows her way around the town and the business. She's funny, outspoken, strong, street smart, but honest. She's everything that makes New York great. On this episode, she addresses what it takes to stay ahead and on top of the event game, no matter what. From how to manage sensitive conversations around budgets to diversion tactics like, look this way at the sparkling object over there while I quickly fix this little thing over here. We also chat about the importance of listening, being resourceful, and throwing everything you got at it. Because that's what it takes to establish successful partnerships that last for years. It's a fun and fast interview packed with a schmear of Yiddish and a heap of good insights on the side. A surefire New York City deli-style recipe for no more bad events. So you guys ready for this or what? All right, let's do this. It's clear you're passionate about this. And no, passionate about everything in this industry. And it's probably why people go back to you. You know, listening to you, it seems like you were like the perfect fit for a lot of these companies. So what is it that you do, and what does Empire Force Events do better than everyone else?
Wow.
Because you're good. We can say it here. You don't need to be humble on this podcast. What can people learn from what you're doing well? What is one of your best practices you want to share?
Well, that is very fair. What we do well and what we do great and what has kept us where we're at, better is hard for me sometimes to say. Believe it or not, I have an ego, but I'm also humble. We're the longest independently and locally owned destination management company in New York City. So what does that mean? I mean, obviously, if you know what destination management companies do, we are event producers in our own right, but we have that special focus on being managers of the destination. So it's not the 4-hour event, but it's also the 4 days surrounding it. Airport meet and greet, transfers to and from the venue, excursion experiences that are indigenous to our destination, New York City, New York State, New Jersey, and Connecticut that surround, let's say, the Final Night Awards Gala. Whereas there are a lot of event producers that might be listening out there that their focus is that Final Night Awards Gala, but they don't do all the other, as we say, if you verstehst a bissel Yiddish, if you understand Yiddish, you do a lot of Chazerei, you know, a lot of other stuff around it. And as being the longest independently owned Destination Magic company with a focus on event production, I feel what we, not necessarily do better than anyone, but we have proven that we have staying power. We have survived through, obviously, the economic downturn, the aftermath of September 11th. We should never compare it to the pandemic. And we've been here. We've been through it all. We've rode the waves of a lot of people spending, client spending, and then not. And we've acclimated ourselves. When we've had all those employees that were here for such a long period of time, ride the wave, as I guess you people out in California would say. I ride the subway everywhere. So maybe we could say it that way.
We ride the wave out here, but I get you.
The pole and maneuvering and grooving. But however, to do all that, as much as I talk a lot, we listen. We ask our clients all the time, what did you like on your last event? What didn't you like? They'll usually tell you what they didn't like. Where do you normally dine when you eat in New York, separate from an event, so we can understand what they do and don't want to do? What worked for you in the past? I don't necessarily need to hear another company's dirty laundry. We all have it. We all goof. We all screw up. But what could we do to become your partner? Not just for this event once, twice, for years. We have some clients that we have been working with since this company has began. And we want to have that staying power. We want to be able to acclimate. If a client says, I want to see it priced this way or don't do this, we're going to listen. It's not about what we think is right or wrong. You can have pink balloons or green polka dots at your event all you want. Do we necessarily think it might work for your look? I don't know. Our job is to suggest, to propose, to guide you, to be resourceful, but then give you what you want and guide you and say, you might want to think about doing it this way. But as much as myself, I talk so much, we ask a lot of questions to understand what we're actually executing, because someone has to have an objective, and that we're the objective to produce your event client. You need to tell us what you think you want to do. And I can't stand that phrase, return on investment. Sometimes it's very hard. We don't do analytics, right? The guests look like they're having a good time. They want the band to play an extra hour. That looks like a good event. You, client, internally have to figure out more on your side. But in order to stay what we're doing in our profession, you have to listen and you got to be committed. So thank you, Scott, for saying and hearing my passion about it. That are there days that we don't want to get up and maybe sometimes do the same old or listen to clients, or I'd rather produce more than propose. Can't stand doing proposals. Tell us what you want to invest financially. Never say the word budget, because budget sounds low. And then let's execute and start getting it done. So I have to believe, I can't say I think, that that's why we're still here.
So speaking of budget, what if a client does come to you and says they want this huge event? They have all these grandiose ideas, but the budget doesn't support it. I assume at that point you have to get really honest, but just in general, how much pushback do you give to clients? You're there to guide them. They're going somewhere. They're asking for champagne, but all they can afford is beer. What do you say
totally
to them?
And that, you know, ties in earlier when I was talking about asking clients, you know, what they want, hearing what they want, asking a lot of questions to get that out of them. But as far as financial parameters are concerned, we set from the very beginning when we're speaking with them, listening to them, we might have a conversation such as, hey, listening to what you want to execute and what you want to engage us to do, we're feeling our fees are going to be around this, to hopefully get for a client to say, yeah, that sounds about right. That's in line. Or what? I never knew it was going to cost that much. And it should never be cost like it's going to cost you. It should be more of, oh, wow, I didn't realize I would have to invest that. But good to know. Let me go back to my stakeholders. Let me check with our team. Let me think about this. Let me, you know, wrap myself around it to see if this is what I thought it was going to be. You deciding if it's worth it, that's up to you as the client. We're going to be here, God willing, ready to do your event, no matter when you call us. We work in very short times here in this profession, in this industry, especially now and in New York. But when they tell us what they want to invest, and then they have an idea of what they want it to be, we would never give them pushback. We would want to explain to them, and listening to what you want to do, you really should be more realistic. And we're coming from one of the most expensive cities in the country in the world. You're going to have to need to invest X amount of dollars for just the food and beverage at the venue before you get into the decorative design and entertainment and what you want to handle, what you want to add to it to enhance the experience, right? It's all those extra experiences. You could just walk in, sit down and have a meal anywhere. You can find a restaurant in New York for any kind of meal at any price that you want to do. Depends on what your experience wants to be for your event. Are you doing just 20 people group dining, or are you doing, 920 people at a museum type venue? Obviously different financial investment. We get this a lot in New York City. Well, we're staying at XYZ hotel, and the room rate is such, we don't really have a lot of money to do anything else for your event. We would say to that client, why are you spending all that money to be at a hotel that you have to invest so much, and you're going to do all these event experiences outside the hotel? New York City's your resort. Why don't you look at a different property, and then you can be able to do everything else? It all depends on what the client's hot buttons are, what their focuses are. Some clients couldn't care about decorative design entertainment, but they want to be at the Schmancy Hotel and eat at fine dining restaurants. That's okay. So we don't want to push back. We want to guide you. But at some point, someone's going to be writing that check. We also never say to a client, oh, that venue is too expensive for you. Who are we to spend somebody else's money? And I say this because I'm a welfare and food stamps kid from Brooklyn. So for me, I'm starting here. That's why I think I was able to make it through the pandemic, because I know what it was like to look at paper towels on a store shelf and decide which one was the better bargain. I always buy Bounty, but you get the concept here. But we never want to say to a client, that's too expensive for you, because you never know, somewhere they might say, oh yeah, we didn't have that money to spend on this. But now that you enlightened us to that, we're going to find the money. We're going to make that experience happen.
Now, listening to you, I realize how important language is when you're talking to your clients and how you phrase things, that it's not cost, it's an investment. You must have some great stories of dealing with clients and being able to set them up to succeed. But what about situations where things maybe didn't go the way you planned? Tell me, has there ever been a time where things just went horribly wrong? And how about we'll have it so that you save the day in the end, where you become the hero of the story?
In general, when things don't go as planned, and you know this, Scott, because as much as you're this great orator and speaker, you're an entertainer as well. You're very entertaining. You're that mind reader too. And I love how you've always done that. That's how we originally met. You don't necessarily do an event and say, well, that event went great, let's do it tomorrow. That was the whole dress rehearsal. You might rehearse some speaking. You might rehearse some staging of way things are going to be presented. You might build an example of the decorative, but you never set up the entire event. And then you get a couple of takes to redo it. That event is happening. Those guests are walking down the hall, and that room, that table in the back is not set up. And you're just somehow fudging it, making it work, protecting your client, moving the guests a certain way, butlering some alcoholic beverages to look at the sparkly things in the other direction. So there's so many different ways that we have made things that are, the doors are about to open and it's not right, or while you're in the event and something crazy happens, how you change that. Usually the way it gets resolved is post-event. And usually, and I know there are going to be clients out there listening, it comes down to having sense and dollars and cents, right? So you don't even wait for your client to say, that dessert buffet looked great, but there were only 19 desserts on there. What about my 20th? And you might even make a joke during the event. Did the guests really know about the 20th? We pulled the signage, we ran down the street, we bought something else that wasn't the plan, filled it in. But now the event is over. Don't worry. Financially, obviously, you're not going to pay for it. We'll take some extra monies off for your pain and suffering. And you also have to make that differential on pain and suffering, because there are days that we never use the word, everything we do are events. We don't use the word parties, but you just got to realize you plan parties for a living for the most part, whether it's whatever the event may be.
Celebrations, and parties, yes.
Celebration, and we don't use parties. If I write the word party, I write why, because we're not party planners. We're event producers, event designers, experience designers, logistical managers. And we have to sometimes put in perspective, we're not in the funeral business. That's one event, although I've done, unfortunately, in my time, a lot of them personally, members of my family, but we don't plan that every day. So you have to hope, was the CEO on the dance? Was she on the dance floor? The CEO, was she on the dance floor fine? Did she realize what was happening in the back with that extra dessert? No. But how can we financially, help you out? You have to be able to think quick on your feet and in any situation, and go to your client with a solution. Here's the problem. Here's the challenge. And here's how we're going to solve it. That doesn't necessarily mean that 20th dessert's going to miraculously going to appear, but here's how we're going to solve this and make this better for you.
So let's talk about some ways that you make your client happy. Give me a time that you've gone above and beyond. What is above and beyond look like for you with your clients?
Going above and beyond, and there's that phrase in our industry, surprise and delight, right? Throwing things in for the client. I don't know. There's a secret. Sometimes you make it financially somewhere else because client has a different place to invest somewhere than elsewhere. I believe surprising, unless the client says, oh my God, you shouldn't have put those other 25 roses back in the centerpiece. My CEO hates roses and he went with the 75. So you just have to figure out how that could be done. We did an event many, many years ago, and the client was bringing in guests that were going, this wasn't in New York, we were going to Las Vegas and then San Francisco. And the client wanted to get the guests to go to the Grand Canyon from Las Vegas and thought we could just drive there. And we said, you can't just drive there. You have to fly from Las Vegas to the Grand Canyon. And the client said, well, you know, let's just take them to any canyon. And the guests were all Spanish speaking. And I made this joke that I said, the guests are going to go Es El Grande Canyon. And we're going to say, no, Es A Grande Canyon. Meaning it's not the Grand Canyon. It's just
it's
a Grand Canyon. And we said, you can't do this. You can't come this far and then not go that far anymore. So we chartered aircraft and we made this happen and got into the Grand Canyon. I don't know if that's something going above and beyond, but it's explaining to the client when we're sitting here talking months out what the event is going to look like, have them shut their eyes and listen and envision and walk in and tell us what they see. And certain clients have different hot buttons. We always feel linen needs to go to the floor. Some clients just don't care less. And as much as we as producers could not imagine walking into the event without linen going to the floor, and the client's like, I'm not paying for it. You either do my event without linen goes to the floor or you're not doing my event. We might decide to take, you know, two squares and make the points hanging or something like that. There's other ways to do it. Maybe rent tables that don't need linen. So again, you said about the communication. It's listening to the client and being resourceful and throwing everything you got at it that you can imagine in order to say, yeah, that's right. That is a much better solution, that you went above and beyond to really make that happen for us.
And in these relationships that you're building, you probably have a lot of legacy clients. What do you do when you're not involved in the event? How often are you touching base with them, building that relationship in between events just to keep them, you know, I think that's an important aspect of this business is how to build equity with your mm-hmm. clients, even when you're not doing an event, so that when you get there, they have these big smiles. It's more about liking you and trusting you. And when you have that relationship, it's a give and take and greater things can come from it. So are there anything that you do in between events to keep that relationship going?
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that, because when Robert and I bought the company, someone had said to us, actually, he was one of the presidents of the International, at the time, Special Events Society, which was ISIS. We obviously don't have that acronym anymore. Now it's ILEA, the International Live Events Association.
They kept Robert ISIS for way too long, in my opinion.
Yeah, okay. And I think some might think terrorists did as well, but understood. So we're founding members of the organization, you know, got involved as a student, you know, college, and here we are. And now we're legacy members. We're two of 30 legacy members internationally. But one of the former presidents, international president, said, well, now that you bought the company, you need to hire a lot of people, you know, to sell your company so you can get all these events to do. We felt, and this is how we built our company, that we need people to service the business, however it comes in. Let me move that to the side for a minute. So when you service good business, when you produce really fabulous events, that's your sales and marketing. That creates the legacy of your company, and hopefully the clients become legacy clients for you to keep coming back. I got to tell you, the height of the pandemic, I was wishing that we maybe have had a better sales engine. No one at Empire has ever had the position with the title of the word sales in it. We don't want to sell people on what we do. We want to engage them and manage the account and just want them to work with us. We've been very reactionary over our years, but tying into your question, how do you keep those clients happy? We've become such good friends with so many of our clients that, you know, okay, social media helps out. They get to see what you're doing. You get to comment about their kids. You get to keep in touch that way. That's a help. We probably should send out more blast emails, but maybe just by posting things social media wise, they get to see what you're doing and just keeping in touch with them. I think all of us out there sometimes don't like when a vendor just calls and says, hi, I'm calling to introduce you to my new line of, I don't know, glassware. You know, maybe it's just better. I just called to say hello. We got a new line of glassware. I'm raising a glass to cheers to you. What's going on in your world? Let me know how I can help you in yours. There's a way to phrase what you do. No one wants to be sold, but I think we want to be engaged. Following up is important. I think it's hard for all of us to do because we're just so busy all the time. But I think it's a good way to stay in touch. Look how we have all these years, right?
Yes, exactly. Well, you know, you always come up with great ideas. I'm sure you're always building a cache of great new ideas. And I know that you're not stingy with your ideas. You know, I got a chance to speak with our good friend, Michael Cerbelli, and he talked about
my
that.
Brother.
Why are we hoarding these ideas? He gives them away. What's a new idea or some new concept or something you've seen that you think is just brilliant and you're comfortable sharing with everyone? Everyone should start trying to do this.
You know, and Michael and I are from Brooklyn, and we've traced back that we think we didn't know each other growing up. That my DJ at my Sweet 16 at
was the Michael.
Restaurant definitely wasn't Michael, but we think that he knows the guy.
Of course.
We got back that far. But, you know, Michael and I guess, grew up in this profession together. And I want to sidebar for a minute when you talked about what came out of the pandemic. And I think this is important, but I'm going to get to that if you don't mind. During the pandemic, when everyone was just didn't have their teams around and supporting them, and a client would call with a need, we wanted to jump on that right away. We wanted to make sure, hey, here's our pricing. Can you support this? I'm glad that they invest in us because they knew we're all trying to build back and all. But a lot of us didn't necessarily have a team. So a lot of times, Michael and his team brought me onto theirs, and I brought Michael's team onto ours. In the good old, I don't want to say good old days, in the olden days, you'd always shield your client from your vendors, right? They would never be copied in the email. They might not even know the name of the company. Guess what? We shouldn't think that way. We probably shouldn't think about that then. Definitely didn't think about it during the pandemic. And I'm coming out of it thinking we don't want to do it that way as well going forward. So what we would do is we would amass a team, and we went, and this is one of our legacy clients who said to me, Jack, I don't care who your team is. Doesn't necessarily mean they have to be your full-time employees that you're paying all this money to. They could be your team that you pull together, and it's another company. So we said, this is the team from, you know, Cerbelli, and they were copied on email. They're handling this portion of the event. And we sometimes even told them, you're charging me X, I'm charging Y. Understand we had to build fees in, or however we're doing percentages, markups, whatever it may be, fees. And they became part of our team to the client. And we used to joke that there was a DMC I heard years ago that wanted the technical production company to take away the name of the tech company that's printed on the road cases. And I called it the case of the, you know, the case, get it as a road case.
Right.
And why would a DMC ever think that their client would think that they own all this technical equipment, and having XYZ Productions on the road case was a hindrance to their business? They should say, you see those road cases there that say XYZ? That is the best technical production company for your event. We get great service, could say we get really great preferential pricing, and that's why they're on this event for you. So I use that just because you mentioned Michael about the camaraderie and the teamwork, that he's a vendor and a client to us. And he's really more of a partner and family. So as far as, you know, great ideas, probably the thing that we're all seeing the most from in our world right now, whether you decide to do it personally as I do events, is projection. When you walk into like the Van Gogh exhibit, now they have the King Tut exhibit. They have the whole luminaires. I'm probably saying it wrong. I don't speak French. Luminaires in New York. When you walk into an environment and everything that you see, every space, the wall, the floor is with projection, that is the way to go. You eliminate your investment, let's say, in decorative design. You have already the canvas is your whole entire venue for what you're going to do with your customized presentation. It's not an idea of obviously mine. I think that's what you're getting at. What have I seen lately?
No, but I mean, this is, I think you're talking about video mapping and projection.
Video mapping, exactly. And obviously you have to have the financing to do that, you know? And so it might just be on your cyclorama on one screen on one wall. But I believe that as clients doing events, you might not have the investment to bring in so much stuff, but what could be that centerpiece? We do a lot of center bars at events because it becomes your center focal point. If you have 1,000 people at an event, those little centerpieces at each cocktail highboy might not be the way to capture them. But if you have limited investment, make it something grand and spectacular. And anything that's customized with logos or performances, when you break that, is it the fourth wall? You know, when you kind of come out of character and, you know, talk to your guests and have entertainers and involve the members of your team, you know, service staff and your logo shirt, if nothing else. There's just clever ways to brand that doesn't always necessarily need to be a lot of money. We can, you know, have a whole conversation about trends. And, you know, Michael is always at the, you know, the forefront of them, and we look to him, but we look to him as well, but they're also out there in everyday life. Like, watch what's going on with pop culture. A lot of people don't like to watch award shows anymore. They think they're boring. Just watch and see what people are wearing or what the songs sound like. There's a lot out there that we can learn. I do believe that, and I started here as the youngest in the industry, being at the job as I graduated college, and now here I am. I've been very honored being inducted into 4 different halls of fame. So I should be able to retire at this point, but I haven't. Not because I'm at that age, but when you get into halls of fame, you've done everything, right? But I got to build back a business.
When you were talking about the video mapping and the Van Gogh experience, you were talking about it, you know, creating more of an immersive experience, whether it's, you know, in the entire room or, as you said, in a centerpiece. We're always looking to have that big wow factor. And I think what you're talking about is definitely a wow factor. And, you know, people are always asking, how can we make an event a 10 out of 10? So in your mind, to sort of close things out, what does an 11 out of 10 look like in the event world?
Oh, boy. Well, there's a lot of different people that would answer what the 11 out of 10 is. Is it your client that you're dealing with, or is it all those guests that are there, right? Because the client might be happy and say, so-and-so at table 30 in the back didn't like the entertainment. We've had clients say, I don't really care. The CEO enjoyed it. My C-suite enjoyed it. We were able to make money because it was a fundraiser. They're fine. And I do want to go back to one thing about the immersive experience. The immersive experience is not always just at that event. Again, we're destination managers here. We are coming to you from the greatest city on earth. So when you're coming to New York City, don't always think, as much as we love to dine at some of the schmanciest high-end restaurants, you can go to a place like Katz's Delicatessen on the Lower East Side and have an immersive experience that is so New York. You can ride the subway. You can just walk around and just see what happens out there. So that is also an immersive experience. So I am honored with the way I talk and the way I act and the way we produce that I'm doing in New York, because they would never accept this anywhere else. As far as
I just want to point out, I actually had an immersive experience here in California involving Katz's Deli. My business manager, Ben, who you know, Ben Carrizo, sent me a whole Katz's Deli package. I got corned beef, I got pastrami, I got matzo ball soup, I got rye, I got different kinds.
Whatever, I hope you got.
I did not get the chop liver, but I got everything.
Next
else.
Time.
But I hear what you're saying. Yeah, there's immersive. Yeah. I figured I had to shout them out at some point. The immersive experience you're saying is all of it, not just the moment they walk in the ballroom or the event space. It's from just being in New York. If you bring them in there, other aspects of the city, and bring that to life.
Right, and the access and egress. So if you're doing that, when I say standard, that 4-hour event in a venue. The access walking in could be exciting. The access when they come out and having a food truck or having entertainers or having paparazzi when they came in, taking the guest picture. Anything that your guests are not expecting to see that they can't get on their own. Now, remember, those of us that are in the event profession, we go to events all the time. We see it all the time. When I bring some of my friends and on the business to an event that we're doing and they're saying, what are you going to do with all those centerpieces? We said, oh, we're going to leave it for the staff. We're going to leave all that. Could you imagine if we all took centerpieces from every event that we've ever produced or gone to and take them home? So you have to realize that sometimes the attendees, and that's why you got to ask a lot of questions, are those that don't go to events all the time. So then you can find out it might not be as challenging, or as Michael and I say this, unless we're rising the dead on the middle of the dance floor, it's hard to impress people in our profession that have been to events all the time. But sometimes those guests might not have been there at all. And this is their one event that they get to go to with their company every year because they sold enough widgets or whatever it may be. So think of it from that perspective. And just think about something that is, what makes you laugh? What do you do when you watch TV or you go through TikTok or Instagram, whatever it may be, that entertains you? And try to think about ways to incorporate that in your event. I don't want to say it's not as difficult as you think. The logistics and pulling it together, you know, it's a science in the planning, but it's an art in the execution. And you really just have to make sure that you have you're only as good to your clients as your supplier partners are to you. So you have to have a great team surrounding you, whether it's internally or externally.
So this has been great, you know, catching up with you. I think, you know, a couple of things that I learned is language is also very important, how you serve your client and how you communicate that to them. We don't talk costs. We talk investments. We don't have parties. We have events, and we are constantly trying to engage. So those are real important things. I think when you're saying 11 out of 10, I think you're talking about making sure everyone's impressed, everyone is excited, the client is happy, the CEOs are happy, and also the audience. I think that would be the 11, not just one of those three components, but all of them, everyone across the board. It has been 30 years that we've known each other, so it all culminated to this. I'm hoping that one day you'll make the No More Bad Events podcast Hall of Fame. I think that's the equivalent of the EGOT. You got all your other Hall of Fames, and then if you get No More Bad Events, that becomes your
EGOT. Well said. And Scott, it's 28 years.
28?
It's 28. We met in 1994.
Yeah. So we're going on 29.
28.
28, 29 years. It's been a long time. You were one of the first people I literally met in the industry. So that's why it's been such a privilege and honor to have this conversation with you. So thank you, Jacqueline, for joining us. And sounds like you're going to have a great 2023. So thank you for being here.
God willing. Thank you, Scott. Honored to be here always. Adore you. Love you. Thanks.
Same here. Thanks, Jacqueline.
That's it for now. I've been your host, Scott Bloom, corporate event MC and comedic keynote speaker. And of course, your connoisseur of connections. Oh, by the way, if you're interested, you can book me for your next event on eSpeakers Marketplace at eSpeakers.com/marketplace. And if you like what you heard, subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. If you loved what you heard, drop us a review and don't forget to share with your friends. No More Bad Events is produced and presented by eSpeakers. Thanks so much for listening. Now go out and make your event a great one.